Hi, I'm Camille, and I'm going to answer a handful of your questions that you've been sending in to me. So this question is from Julia, and Julia says to me, I've recently done some therapy with you, and I realized that my marriage, I always thought that I was the problem and that I didn't deserve love. I have put up with some abuse and an addicted husband. Now I feel like I want to run away and find new love, but I've got 4 kids and we have a house and our community loves us. How do I forgive him? He is trying and start over. I don't feel the same way about him like I used to. And after his affair, I want to have my own. What do I do? So, look, relationships are messy. And when this relationship started, you were both very young and you did just jump into having kids and you both were immature and you weren't ready to really be in a relationship, frankly, but you kind of grew up together and it wasn't 100% bad. And there were some horrible things you went through. So as you've grown and healed and done some work on yourself, you have changed and you are a new person now. And I think he's a new person as well. He's done a lot of therapy. He's grown. He's changed. He's made amends. He's cleaned up his mess. He's not doing those addictive things anymore. But you do get to choose. You do have a choice. And you want to look at what you have in your life. And it isn't lost on me that you quitting things, you know, you do have the right to quit a marriage. You have the right to quit, you know, living a certain way or You have a right to quit relationships. You can. And you also have to be responsible for the impact that that would be if you quit. So you have autonomy. You can choose these things. But I just want you to be aware that there's an impact for your choices and there's consequences for your choices and actions as well. And I'm not advocating that you stay or go. I just want you to think things through. And if you look at what has been happening inside of the relationship, you've gained some credibility. You've gained some power. You know yourself differently. And this man you're married to also knows you differently. He treats you a lot better now than he did before. Is the grass going to be greener? Maybe. Would it be easier to just, you know, have a clean start with somebody new? Yes, probably. The love that you experience with somebody new would probably be amazing because he has a whole great new perception of you. There's no water under the bridge. He doesn't have a history with you. There's not a lot of pain there that for you to be triggered with him. However, you still have pain to work through. And no matter who you get with in the future, if it's not your husband, even if it is your husband, no matter who you're with in the future, you're going to have triggers happen. So you're going to relive your pain, whether you're still married to the same man or have a new boyfriend or a new girlfriend or whoever you're with in the future. That pain is yours now to work on. And it isn't that you get to be the victim. And I don't think you are the victim anymore. You've kind of left being the victim. You've decided you're no longer going to be the victim of him. That's right. And so it's up to you to work through this, and you are. But it might be wise to work it through right now while it's fresh and while you've got support with the man that's helping you do it and willing to do it with you. I think the healing is probably where I would suggest you go, continue to work through the healing your pain. And at the end of that journey, we're probably never fully healed, but at the end of this, the big journey of you discovering who you really are now and who you want to be and how you want to be perceived and stepping into a new identity, maybe it isn't about finding someone else to fulfill your needs. Maybe it's about finding you at the end of this rainbow. That's the real gold. Is in finding out who you really are and the resilience that you have and the trust you're regaining for yourself, the love you're regaining for yourself, the strength you've got. And maybe your misery becomes your ministry. And so it isn't about running off and, you know, splitting the household, splitting the income, having your kids go through a divorce, have 2 households for them. Maybe you level up in life purpose and maybe this happened for you, not to you. And maybe there's a contribution you get to become because of it. So consider it's training and education. And I'd like for you to, you know, make a difference on the planet with what you've gone through. You've gone through a lot and you do have some abilities with other people. I would, you know, maybe put this energy toward being a contribution in humanity, for humanity. And no matter what, if you're going to leave this marriage, leave with love. Leave as friends. You've got four kids together. You want to make sure that there's workability there. And I would create that now. And again, if you both decide to end it, let it be a mutual decision. But you want to let go of the resentment, the anger, because no matter what, you're going to take you with you wherever you go. And that will eventually come out in a new relationship. I guarantee it. Okay, long answer for your question, but thanks for sending that in, Julia. I have another question here. How do I deal with a husband who doesn't want me to change? Okay, well, I don't have a ton of detail on this, but I would say to you, are you codependent? And codependency means that you live for another. If I'm you, here's what I would look at. The first thing you want to do is say, well, I'm going to change. I'm going to do what I need to do. That's how I operate. No one's the boss of me. I'm the boss of me. I'm a rebel like that. But you do want to have a dialogue if this person's open to it. Of course, they don't want you to change. Of course, they're scared. And so if they see you changing, and I'm not sure how you're changing, but if you're changing with losing weight or doing something to improve your image or getting more money or, you know, however you're changing, growing, probably improving yourself. That's probably, I'm intuiting that's what you're doing. If you're improving yourself, this is a threat to your partner if they're having a reaction to it. And so you want to sit down and have a real frank conversation of what's going on for them, that you're improving yourself. That's really what you want to talk about. And maybe there's reassurance. Maybe you can reassure them. Maybe they'll change with you. Maybe they'll grow with you. But ultimately, if you have a partner that sabotages your growth and is suppressive of you and needs you to kind of stay in your box, you're going to outgrow that person. And you want to say to them, don't put, you know, an ultimatum in front of me where I have to choose me over us. I think if you're smart enough in how you do this, and maybe you seek counseling, you know, maybe you have someone help you explain to this person, I'm not doing this to leave you. I'm doing this to improve me because I need to. Maybe you're able to enroll him in improving himself too and realizing he doesn't have to lose you. But if you're, you know, losing all this weight and looking hot and skinny and going out dancing with your girlfriends and you're out on the weekends and he's like, where are you? What are you doing? And this is a radically new you. Of course he's threatened. Of course he's scared. And he might be upset thinking you're going to cheat on him. So that's, you know, be responsible for the change. And again, I think it may be time to renew looking at your relationship and your role inside that relationship, his role inside the relationship. There's got to be some give and take and see if this is something a future you want to live into together. Let's see here. My husband was cheated on by his ex-spouse and he's got jealousy issues and angry. He wants to kill the guy that got his ex-wife pregnant because he was his friend. He feels betrayed by his friend and his ex-wife. And when I can't be found, he loses it. I love this guy. I don't want to lose him, but I can't take this anymore. What do I do? Okay. That's a lot. And this guy is definitely traumatized. I would say, was this guy relationship ready when you met him? Obviously not, because he's still got this past that's just not, he's still being haunted by his past. You have to put a boundary up, my dear. This is someone who's going to roller coaster you, and he's hurting. He's wounded. I'm sure he's a wonderful human being 99% of the time. But when his button gets pushed, when he gets triggered, he's taking it out on you. And that's because you're a safe person and you're in his space and he loves you. And his biggest fear is you're going to do the same thing to him. And he's going to have a double betrayal again. And he's going to look like a fool and he's going to hurt. And then, and I bet financially he's not sharing a lot with you and he's probably keeping things, you know, to himself. But you have to either pull back and have a real conversation with him about this. I'm sure you've tried. If all else fails, if you can't seek counseling, if your boundaries, if you're trying to talk to him, it doesn't work, you need to leave. Now, I didn't say you need to divorce him. You need to leave for him to get some perspective. Go half a step out. Go half a step backward. You know, it's interesting when people start a relationship, everything's going great. Everything's awesome until maybe they move in together. And then the fighting begins because they probably weren't ready to move in. So when they come see me and I say, well, when did the fighting start? When did things start going south? Yeah, when we moved in together or when we got engaged or And it's because you're not ready for that. That was a step you really weren't ready for. So back out of that. Go back to where it was working. And let's maybe see what's the issue with the ring, when you got the ring, or what's the issue when you got, you know, engaged, or when you moved in together. What's the issue? Or when you got married, you know, when was it working? Go back to that place. So this might be what you have to do with this gentleman, is to maybe say, look, we're going to do a timeout. And he might, you know, flip out. You're leaving. No, I just can't do this constant, you know, projection, and insist that he talk to somebody and go with him. You know, if he's won't do it himself, go with him. There's also a lot of great lectures, a lot of great talks about trauma, about PTSD. He's got PTSD, post-traumatic stress, and it's painful for him. This guy's not loving that he's always triggered, but he's terrified. He's terrified he's going to go through that same upset again. So if you really want to make this work, you've got to slow things down. The minute you engage and react and start defending yourself and, no, I would never, that's not helping. You almost need to be quiet. Like, just, you know, when he's going off or when he's doing his thing, don't engage. Don't defend yourself. Just say, you know, you're not talking to me. You're just not talking to me. You're not seeing me. You're not hearing me. I love you. And maybe that's all you say. And he goes on and on, and until he kind of gets a wake up moment. But it's almost like he's probably in a trance as he's going through this upset. You might notice that he doesn't seem to be doing eye contact with you. He needs someone. You probably need someone else to kind of help mediate this through. But pull back. Don't engage. Don't personalize this. It's going to be hard for you not to personalize it, but if you personalize it, you're going to want to leave him. And again, if he gets aggressive or if he threatens you, you do need to, you know, be safe. But this guy's got some major triggers. And then I'm sure he's so sorry and he loves you, but he's upset because he's not over the past. I would pull back. I would take some time from him and make him get some therapy, because it's not going to last anyway if you keep going through this, girl. You're in hell, probably. Okay, let's see here. Is a cheater always a cheater? And, you know, why do people cheat? Okay, let me address that. No, I don't think that that's absolutely true. I think that people have said, once cheater, always cheater. I don't know if that's always the case, because I've had clients that were really unhappy in relationships and they cheated, and then they're remarried and, you know, we're 25 years strong and they're in love and they're happy and they're great. So I don't believe that's absolutely true. I think people that have character flaws have character flaws. I agree with that. But that means they could lie, and that could, they're gamblers or they're drinkers, or, you know, they're going to run to something to self-medicate. Maybe that's true until they do some work on themselves. But I don't think a once cheater, always a cheater. But I will say to you, if a person's going to cheat on you, it doesn't start with the bedroom. It starts with the conversation. It starts with, you know, crying the blues about you. Oh, I'm dealing with my, you know, horrible husband, my wife. You know, they're going to find someone to confide in. They're going to find someone to have a secret conversation with. And they're going to probably cry about you or complain about you, be critical of you. So the cheating begins before you're taking off your clothes. Okay. So if you're in a relationship and your partner is not being honest with you, if they're grinning and burying something, that's really the betrayal. That's when the betrayal is beginning. And you want to try to have rigorous conversations with your partners where you're getting to the truth of things. You want to ask questions, or that you kind of do want to fight. You do want to have little arguments and kind of, you know, go back and forth on where you're both happy, unhappy, and you want to hear some hard truths. So if that's happening, chances are you're not going to be cheated on. But the cheating is when you've got someone who's, oh, I'm great, everything's fine, and they're pleasing you constantly. They're going to be griping about you to somebody else, potentially. I'm not saying that's absolutely true, so don't go home and say, you're never fighting with me, you're cheating. I didn't say that. But you do want to have some healthy discussions, you know, rigorous debates about things. Then you can usually know that this person's invested. They're invested in you. They're invested in their relationship. But I have had people that have cheated, and it really depends on the motive. So this is where I think people are more forgiving. I had one guy who cheated on his wife. He went through two deaths. One brother committed suicide. His dad, I think, had a truck accident, died suddenly. He was drinking heavily, very wealthy guy, and going out to the bars, just drowning his sorrows. Didn't want to be home. It was too painful to be home. His wife's like, what's going on? Where are you? She had to be home with the kids, of course. She's dealing with things, the house, keeping things going while he's out just kind of partying with his friends. And his friends were picking up on women and going to titty bars and stuff like that. And he's buying everything. He's just trying to drown his sorrows. Well, there was some inappropriate stuff happening with a girl, and he's talking to her, crying to her about the loss and the death and everything, and some stuff happened. So in that context, you know, she got him in counseling. He's quit drinking. He's not hanging out with his friends like this anymore. And she has forgiven him because it wasn't a normal time in his life. So that situation that he did cheat, she's forgiven him, and they're doing great because he's getting some help for his grief and stuff like this. But if you've got someone who's got contempt for you, contempt is an indicator of divorce is on its way. When you really have contempt for your partner, your spouse, girlfriend, boyfriend, it's hard to get past contempt. So that's one sign that that relationship's not going to last. But I do think that sometimes people do stupid things. And the number one reason for cheating, by the way, is revenge. So what does that say? It's a way to hurt somebody. So people that are with married people, they're a tool. You know, they're kind of a weapon against that other person. Not cool, but they use that person to wound them, get them back in control or make them feel bad or, you know. And so it isn't usually about love. It's about revenge. So when you know that, and again, you can do some battle and figure out what's going on, sometimes you can come back from that. And if you've been cheated on, you really kind of want to know the reason. Like, that's what I'm saying. There's circumstances. Sometimes I will say to the guy, her turn. She's not going to let it go. And we've been, you know, 10 sessions in and she's not, doesn't trust you. And you're sick of hearing about it. Well, then ask her, what's it going to take for you to let this go? Or should we just get divorced? No, I don't want a divorce. Okay, well, then what's it going to take? And maybe she gets to have a turn. Maybe she gets to cheat on you. Now, every time I say that, men are just, no, I mean, that's just, that can't happen. That cannot be the way. But I say, look, it may be the way because she needs to feel like she hurt you too. You need to, we got to even the playing field. And you may not like that. People don't want to hear that. But that's sometimes really how people sometimes get back together and make it work. They both went through the same thing. They both understand. They both messed up. And they get back together. I'm not, again, it's messy. It's not easy. But, you know, staying with the cheater is not easy. And then being the cheater and then, you know, getting ball kicked routinely is not easy. None of this is easy. But you do want to figure out what it's going to take to make it work if you're committed to staying and if you have a family. And or you leave with love and you divorce in a friendly way and you do the therapy it requires to kind of get past it. So let me look here. How long does it take for relationship newness to wear off? Usually it takes 120 days, about 4 months in. So the mask kind of falls off around, you know, the honeymoon phase is over around 4 months and you're going to start seeing people for who they really are. So if you're being love bombed, which is what narcissists do, is they, you're everything, you're, you know, they're over the moon for you, you're amazing, all this stuff, that the honeymoon phase will kind of end around 3-4 months in. And they might start being critical of you or dismissive of you or saying things like they're just not as enamored anymore. It changes. So be prepared for that. Some people really get a down feeling when, man, it's just not the same. And relationships do evolve and nobody can live in that state of bliss and euphoria as in the beginning forever. There's got to be some reality settling in because relationships have to kind of get normalized and practical and there's life to live and bills to pay. You can't live in a honeymoon phase forever. Let's see here. How long should you date before you get married the second time? I'm a firm believer in kind of going through all the seasons. If it's the second time around, there's probably not a big hurry. And if you've got children, okay, the kids need to have buy-in. There's so many problems that happen when the kids aren't ready for you to move forward. So I say in the beginning of a new relationship, if you've got children with someone else, just drip on them. Like let the new relationship just, you know, small increments of time. They're going to show up, drop something off, shake hands and leave. Maybe we're going to go to a park and have a picnic and then leave. I wouldn't have everything at the house. Go someplace, let them, you know, pay for dinner. And they really need to engage your kids and you know, they got to like each other. So I wouldn't just think it's going to all work out. This is a relationship your kids are going to have with this person too. So give your kids their time to get to know this person. But yeah, I'd say give it a year. I would take a year. Let me see here. Should we combine our finances? Both of us had exes that tried to take a lot of money from us. we seem to fight whenever we talk about money. What do we do? Don't combine your finances just yet, apparently. This is where the war zone's going to be because you both have wounds with finances. So I wouldn't hurry to combine income just yet. I think you both have your own bank accounts. Maybe you have a joint account and your own bank accounts. And so if there's joint bills coming out of one account, that's fine, but you both put some money in there. But I wouldn't try to make it so traditional and one account and everything goes through that. Don't kill yourselves to do that. If you both got some history there, you're going to have some reactionary moments because who are you going to remind him of? His ex-wife. Who is she, are you going to remind him of? Or who's going to remind you, your ex-husband? So the exes are going to, you know, start coming into play here. And then trust issues are going to come into play. And it's not about each other. You're probably both very trustworthy. It's about your past exes. And you don't want to bring them into this relationship. So slowly enter the minefield of money together. And you may need some counseling or something to kind of help that happen. You may not be able to be successful with that subject on your own. Let's see if there's anything else. There's a handful of others. Okay, yeah. Our son is a fabulous baseball player. He is 13. He broke his ankle. He got kind of yelled at by the coaches. He has a hard time. He's the only child, so he has a hard time being yelled at. He wants to quit baseball. We don't want him to. It's a fight with us and him, and we don't want to lose him and have him hit us. What do we do? Okay. Look, you're his parents. You're not his agents. And yes, I do believe at 13 he's got some valuable talent. But let's go into his experience for a minute. If he doesn't play ball, what does that mean to you? In his world, he's got a hurt ankle. He's playing on a hurt ankle. Usually they push these players to play too quickly, and they aren't ready. So he's also getting pushed around by coaches. And if he's not used to that, and, you know, this is coaches. That's what they do. They're motivating. That's how they are. This isn't somebody he's used to, though. This isn't a fun experience for your son. And, yeah, I get he's got talent, but he probably got here from some sort of really pleasurable, fun experience when he was younger. Loved baseball. I bet he loved baseball at some point. And then he quit loving baseball because he got hurt and he's had some bad coaching experiences. But if you can't be with that, if you can't handle that and you're kind of pushing him to keep going and, you know, maybe we have expectations now and where could he go? Could he have a career? Like, look at all this wanting for him what he doesn't want for himself. And if he doesn't want it for himself and you want it for him and he doesn't want it for himself, you're going to be the one suffering. And he's suffering because he feels like he's letting you down. He doesn't want to displease you. You're his parents. But this kid is going to put up a fight. And at some point, he's going to rebel. And his rebellion is either going to be, you know, to get out of it, he's going to get hurt again. Because the only way out, the only freedom he's got is to not is to get hurt, then he can't play. And then he's going to disappoint you. So then how does he deal with that? Look, there's got to be a little pressure release here. So he gets to have a vote. I know, Mom, you have a vote. Dad, you have a vote. But you might be able to hold him to account with chores, grades, being respectful, you know, being sober. Like, there's things that you can probably expect out of him as your son, and he needs to be a good kid. But you may not be able to expect him to want to play baseball. You can't make him want something. You see what I'm saying? So I would have to address your expectations of him and the pressure he's getting from you and the coaches. And then I would want to talk to him about, do you feel pressured? Yes, I do. And the fun's gone out of baseball for him. This is kind of typical for some kids. It turns into a job. And he's 13 years old. And all he wants to do is play and have fun with his friends like he used to. But when we go, oh, he's so good at this. And the coaches are, oh, this kid could go. They see a commodity, right? And look, it's not, you look at all the world of sports and these players get beat up. They get kind of used up. You know, they're a commodity. And they want these players to make them a lot of money. So I just think you got to strike a balance. But I still think you have to, number one, advocate for your child. You're the parent, not the agent. And I don't think it's about money for you guys necessarily. I think it's about where he could go. So I'm sure it's about wanting him to achieve all he can achieve. I get it. But slow down, back up, understand him, let him vent. And sometimes after he just has a good vent or I don't want to and you can't make me, say, okay. I can't tell you how many times I have had students, you know, want to quit something, and they, okay, honey, you can quit. If you want to quit, go ahead and quit. And the friends say, oh, no, no, please, we need you. I love you on the team. Please don't quit. We'll have fun together. And the friends actually talk them back into staying. Or they quit and they're relieved and they go on and do something even greater. They learned a great work ethic from sports. They're fit. They're healthy. They're better off from sports. But they just, it's just not in them to do it. It's just not in them to do it. I had one 6'6", huge kid in senior year in high school. He's got scouts flying in, you know, I mean, dropping in with helicopters on the field. Big deal to see this 6'6" kid play football, right? He wanted to play basketball, frankly. He could do both. But they coaches wanted him in football, so he's a pretty big kid. Long story short, he quit the team probably, you know, halfway into the season. And he said, I just can't hit guys for no reason anymore. That was his, you know, reasoning. He says, I just can't hit them. I don't want to hit guys for no reason. It's just not in me. And if I got to go to Notre Dame, or if I got to, you know, get a scholarship to go to college, and I got to hit guys for no reason, I don't want to do it. To thine own self be true. And now he's a mechanical engineer and he's doing great and he doesn't miss football at all. I think his parents wanted him to go pro or something, and he's got the size to go pro, but he didn't have the heart. And he too hurt his ankles, his low back. You know, I think he actually had a back surgery, herniated disc or something. So this, it just wasn't in him. He just doesn't have that. So even though you have the size and the skill, and the joy went out of it for him too, he just wasn't having fun anymore. So be cognizant of this is still their childhood too. And you can encourage them, but you can't live their life for them. Okay, that's a wrap. So there's some answers to your questions. I hope this helped people out there. And keep watching. I enjoy doing this. Thanks, and have a peaceful day. Bye.